and to order. Good morning, everyone. My name is Representative Gordon Hassan. I am the chair of Economic Development, and we're doing a joint hearing today with Workforce Development and Economic Development. I want to thank all of you guys for being here. I also want to thank South Central College for hosting us. Last year, we did a lot of great things. Someone can say we cleared the house. And there's still more work to do. Today, we came here, to tell you all the great things we have done and to talk about the crisis in workforce and childcare, but also to hear from you guys, the local community, about some of the persistent issues that are happening here, and then to also plan with you what the future looks like for Minnesota. With that, I will have the vice chair of workforce and the local rep for this district officially welcome us in Mankato.
Good morning, peers. Good morning to all of my fellow members who came down today to North Mankato. Thank you all for being here today for the field hearing on jobs and economic development. First and foremost, you know, I think it's important to say that in Minnesota, we, the legislature, did a lot of great things, and some of that stuff actually trickled down locally. I wanted to talk a little bit about the jobs and economic development because some of that stuff made a big impact right away on the legislation we passed last year. There was $1 million that was sent to Gordini USA in North Mankato. They're a local business. They make winter gear. They make goggles for skiing and snowboarding and things like that. That is going to help with their $12.9 million capital investment, which creates about 60 new jobs for our area. So I really appreciate the fact that they were able to receive a job creation grant from the Minnesota Investment Fund for that. Also, in our area, we have a lot of great nonprofits that do a lot of great things for our community. I'd say that we're lucky in Mankato, North Mankato, and St. Peter because there's a lot of generosity in our community, but also there's a lot of great nonprofits that really do help people in need. One of those organizations is the Minnesota Valley Action Council, but we call it MVAC for short, and they received nearly $900,000 this year for four different types of awards, $375,000 for the Individual Training Pathways Program, $275,000 grant program for the On-Ramp to Career Pathways Program, $186,000 for the Getting to Work Program, which allows people to get transportation so they can drive. You know, I will tell you that we kind of live in a geographic oddity in this area. It's 12 miles to anywhere. St. Peter's 12 miles. It's 12 miles to Nicollet. It's 12 miles to a lot of places. This is kind of like the central hub for South Central Minnesota. A lot of people have their jobs here. A lot of people take their kids to school here. A lot of people shop here, but it's a drive. And with transportation needs, it's a really important program because if you have the ability to have a house, if you have the ability to have transportation, you have the ability to have a job. It's really important. And then also $50,000 grant for the Supportive Services Grant Program for literacy, job training, and that sort of thing for folks with issues that need to be supported. Also, you know, I think it's really important to point out a couple of things. We have some very small communities in our area. And because the city of Kasota is really a small community, they also don't have a lot of tax base, but they have some real important needs when it comes to water and electrical. They received a $554,000 grant from Deed, and that is a part of the $24 million that Deed funded through the Small Cities Development Program, one of 35 cities. And so Kasota is able to increase their water and electrical for the community, which allows more houses to be built and also allows for the industrial area to be developed as well. So that would mean more tax base into the future. So some of this seed money is really going to impact communities across our state. $405,000 made its way to Mankato State University for the Small Business Development Center. That's part of the $12.85 million that we passed for the Small Business Partnership Program. And then also, you know, in our area, as you drove on 169 down here, you saw some redevelopment on the right side of the road. One of the issues that we have is there's a couple of properties that were blighted over time. And we have new redevelopment usage that's happening in our area. And one of those is the old Dutler Bowl site. It was a former bowling alley. It was redeveloped after that into some market spaces for individuals to rent and lease. Now that bowling alley has been torn down. And with $149,275 for the redevelopment fund for the city of Mankato, we're able to redevelop. Is it going to be a 9,000 square foot plus five-story mixed-use commercial building? And that will allow us to have some more opportunity for more jobs and more opportunities for people who live here to enjoy the businesses in the community. I've had a lot of local meetings with a lot of local people. We're at South Central College, and so I have to say first and foremost on that, thank you for hosting us today. South Central College has a bonding request for $6 million for renovating some of the lab spaces that we have here on campus. That's to make more opportunity for people in greater Minnesota to have jobs. One of those, I can tell you right now, is welding. It's a really important program. It builds community. It builds the infrastructure for the community well into the future. It's important that we have welders. And this college partners with local businesses to make sure that they're getting their needs met in the business side of it, but also in the training space. What better place than South Central College to get that welding certificate? There's a lot more, including surgery technicians. We've got a whole host. There's a bonding bill request. And so I wouldn't be remiss if I didn't mention that $6 million to renovate the spaces. The one benefit is there are 10 unique businesses and organizations in this community who've already put up the match for them. And so it's really important that our community step up. When I talked about that generosity, there's one example of where we have that generosity in our business community. I talked to communities across my district, and they talk about how they need more opportunity for childcare. Last year, we passed some real money in the bonding bill and also in these committees for childcare. That money is now just being released. And so we're going to see some additional opportunities pop up across greater Minnesota for childcare. Minnesota State University Mankato has some real unique opportunities for success in our business community as well. The more they grow, the opportunities that they have, the more opportunity is going to make a fiscal impact for the positive in our community in greater Minnesota, but of course in greater Mankato as well. The last thing I'll say is this, you know, I talk to schools, and schools are really interested in having more educators in the workforce. They're interested in having more opportunities for educators to come into the workforce. And so as we talk as a committee, I'm really looking forward to new opportunities to support small businesses and offer opportunities for people in the education space. And I know this is going to be a policy year, but we have some real big opportunities ahead of us. I want to welcome you to Mankato at South Central College. And then I think I'll turn it back to you, Madam Chair. And from there, I know we've got a great list of speakers. And I also want to take the opportunity to recognize a couple of folks that are here in the community as well in this room. We have with us today Representative Luke Frederick from my B side across the river in Mankato, and former Representative Jack Considine is also here today. So thanks for being here as well.
Thank you, Vice Chair Brand. That was a glimpse of the work that we have done. We have spent over $1 billion on creating jobs and supporting our small businesses across the state. With that, we will go to our next speaker. Our next speaker is Cameron Mock. He's an analyst from Labor Market Information Office Department of Employment and Economic Development. Please introduce yourself, and I believe you have a packet that will be walking us through.
Okay. I need to hand it out to everybody.
Do we have a?
Where's the clicker?
Or the?
When you were talking about bonding requests, it was a great opportunity because we have the vice chair in the bonding committee here today, Chair Ryer here today. So we were also here for the bonding tour last fall.
Yes.
So yep. Thank you here about the impact that we can have.
How do I, I apologize. How do I get it to advance?
On the right.
That is what I'm doing.
Oh,
sorry.
I'm sorry.
Well, good morning, everyone. And thank you so much, chairs, for inviting me here today.
My name is Cameron Mott. I am the Regional Analysis and Outreach Manager for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I work in the Labor Market Information Office, and I get to manage a team of five excellent regional analysts stationed around the state. And so at the end of the presentation, there is our contact information. Please feel free to reach out to any of us. We are happy to help in any way that we can. All right, so I will do it manually if that's all right. It's probably easier to stand here in the middle anyways. So good morning. So my goal with the time that I have available here is to give a high level overview of how things are going in the state's economy. And then also at the end, try and focus in a little bit more specifically on South Central region. But again, please know that this information is available for every region of the state. And we have a team dedicated to providing this type of information to legislators, businesses, the general public, and certainly workforce and economic development partners. So with that, I will jump in here. So at the high level, things in Minnesota seem to be going pretty well right now. If you look at the state of Minnesota, our population grew by about 23,000, almost 24,000 people over the last year. So that is a 0.4% growth rate, which ranks us right in the middle nationally of the 50 states. U.S. as a whole was growing faster. The U.S. grew about 1%, so we're not growing as fast as the U.S. as a whole, but we are right in the middle overall. Probably one of the issues that you hear about quite frequently is that our labor force is not fully recovered to pre-pandemic levels. We are still down right now about 28,500 workers in comparison to where we were in February of 2020, right before the pandemic struck. And it's not always fair to compare apples to oranges in that way. Like, you wouldn't always want to compare February to December, but that is a very notable date for the state. In December of 2023, our statewide unemployment rate was 2.9%. That is the 10th lowest unemployment rate in the United States. And if you look at our job growth, so over the past year, we've added about 51,000 net new jobs, which ranks us 24th in terms of percentage growth rate in the U.S. Minnesota has long been well known for having a which United States, and we're well above the U.S. rate overall, which is 62.5%. And then finally, one other note, and I'll dig into this in a little bit more detail as I go through. The state had over 200,000 job openings in November of 2023, which is a very high number. It's been sustained for a long period of time. And so as of right now, the state has more than two job openings for every available job seeker, person who is unemployed and actively seeking work in the state. That is a very tight labor market. So overall, Minnesota had about 3.1 million workers in December of 2023. That is a seasonally adjusted number. Again, with a really low unemployment rate, we actually have fewer than 100,000 workers who are currently unemployed out of that 3.1 million workers total. One really kind of interesting note, so between December of 1976, first year we have state level local area unemployment statistics data available, we've added about 1.2 million workers total during that time frame, so really substantial labor force growth in the state, but we actually have fewer unemployed workers now than we had back in 1976, so it's a story of lots of people entering the workforce and lots of people getting jobs over that time frame. I do have just a real quick breakdown of labor force growth over decades. So the 1990s were an exceptional time in Minnesota. We added hundreds of thousands of jobs. We added about 414,000 workers into our labor force during that time frame. Our labor force growth slowed down considerably then in the 2000s, but we also had two pretty significant recessions during that time frame. The 2000 recession was a little bit less, or was a milder in the state of Minnesota than what we saw in the U.S. overall. But then the Great Recession, 2007-2008, was substantial and led to long-term recovery in the state of Minnesota. Then between 2010 and 2020, added about 193,000 workers during that time frame. So we were again seeing labor force growth and really high labor force participation rates. We were above 70% during that time frame. And so it is still a little bit jarring to see that post-pandemic, we have not fully recovered all of the workers that we lost during that time frame. And it's certainly a complicated picture of some of the challenges for Minnesota's labor force moving forward. At 2.9%, Minnesota has the 10th lowest unemployment rate overall, and we've long had a lower unemployment rate than the United States as a whole. And that's actually very similar to other Midwestern states. They all tend to also have very low unemployment rates. So you can see North Dakota and South Dakota. North Dakota is actually tied with the lowest unemployment rate in the U.S. In December of 2023. South Dakota was third lowest at 2%. You can see Iowa and Wisconsin not too terribly far behind us in terms of overall unemployment rate. And this is a long-term challenge. Minnesota has had a low unemployment rate really since about 2015. And we had a really long-running economic expansion during that time frame. So one of the challenges that I'm sure, again, you guys probably hear is that businesses would like to add more jobs if they had access to more workers. If you look at job growth on a monthly basis, so we added about 800 jobs over the past month. So it looks like 0.0%, but we were still seeing a slight amount of job growth in the state over the month. And for the most part, you know, this is a pretty stable pattern. Minnesota has a steadily growing economy, with the exception, of course, of the pandemic period. That kind of threw everything off. So our monthly growth rate was ranked 35th overall, but that can change greatly from month to month, because last month we saw, so in November, we saw much more rapid job growth, and I think we were 12th fastest. So there is some variation. I think maybe a better way to look at how things are going is to look at over the year growth rate. So to compare this December to the previous December. And so if you look at it that way, Minnesota has gained about 51,000 net new jobs over the past 12 months. And on that ranking, Minnesota ranks right in the middle. Again, we're 24th out of 50 states. Some of the super sectors that have seen pretty notable job growth over the past year, construction is up 8.8%, which is much faster than we're seeing construction job growth in the rest of the U.S. Trade, transportation, and utilities is up about 2.6% over the year. So this includes pretty strong growth in areas like retail trade and also transportation and warehousing, but a lot of different subsectors within that category are also seeing some growth. Mining and logging also seems to be doing better in the state of Minnesota in comparison to the U.S. overall. We've also seen notable job growth in important industries like education and health services. That was an area that was hit very hard during the pandemic and seems to have bounced back, although not growing at the same rate as the U.S. overall. Leisure and hospitality is another area that was hit incredibly hard during the pandemic period and has been growing in recent years, catching up to pre-pandemic levels. Other services, which would include things like repair and maintenance, personal services like haircutting and things like that, also is up and is seeing strong growth over the past year. And then finally, government is up, although not as fast as the U.S. rate overall. Some of the super sectors in Minnesota that have lost jobs over the past year, financial activities is actually down in the state of Minnesota, and it's kind of going at an opposite pace as what was happening during the pandemic. We actually saw a lot of growth in financial activities during that time frame, and now it has switched. Professional and business services, which was really leading growth in the state of Minnesota over time, has experienced a bit of a slowdown. Manufacturing is down over the year, but is an industry that's extremely important to the state and has done relatively well since the pandemic recession. And then finally, information is down 4.1%, and that is an industry that's seen long-term decline. And again, there's a comparison to how we look in comparison to neighboring states. Again, we're kind of in the middle of the U.S., so we're growing faster than some and slower than others. Again, Minnesota ranks sixth highest in terms of labor force participation rates among the 50 states. We are well known for our hard work ethic. Again, most of the year, we're hovering around 68.5% in terms of labor force participation, but it has been dropping in the last couple months. And again, there are challenges to sustaining that high level of labor force participation over time, including the aging of our population. So we had a significant number of retirements that happened. And then also caregiving responsibilities have changed within the state, and that has certainly pulled a lot of people out of the labor force. And, you know, one of the things that, that EED is constantly working on is trying to figure out how do we help facilitate bringing those people back into the labor force. And I should also note, again, this is a very common thing for Midwestern states. A lot of the states in our area also have very high labor force participation rates. So the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics does a job openings and labor turnover survey every month, and they publish data on the number of job openings and separations and quits and new hires and those types of things. As of November of 2023, there's a one-month time lag on that. Minnesota had 209,000 job openings in the state of Minnesota, which is a very high number, and it's been sustained at that high number for quite some time. Minnesota actually kind of made the switch back in 2017, where we went to having more job vacancies than we had unemployed workers. And since then, we've been operating within this tight labor market, and it has remained challenging in that way moving forward. So as of right now, again, we would say there's less than or there's two job vacancies for every available job seeker right now, which is a very tight labor market and certainly creates some challenges for employers. Similar situation for surrounding Midwest states as well. The Labor Market Information Office also does a survey called the Job Vacancy Survey, and it provides some additional detail that we can't get from JOLTS. So it includes the industry and occupation of those job openings in the state. And so that can give us some insight into what industries are hiring and what kind of challenges are they facing in terms of finding qualified workers. So this probably won't be too surprising, but healthcare and social assistance has almost a quarter of the job vacancies in the state of Minnesota. In 2022 is about 45,000 job vacancies. Following that is retail, trade, accommodation, and food services. Both of those industries have had high numbers of vacancies for quite a long time and have had challenges finding workers. Manufacturing also had about 19,000 job vacancies in 2022, which is a record high. It's the largest number of vacancies that manufacturing has ever had. And then you can see there's demand across every industry. So wholesale trade and construction and educational services, all of those areas are seeing a lot of hiring demand. And if you can see in the figure, so that gray line in the background is the number of unemployed workers. And then the bars on the front, so the black bars and then the red bar in the front is the number of job vacancies. And so, again, you can see like in 2017 is when we made that switch where we had more vacancies than unemployed people, and very different. So the pandemic recession, the recovery from the pandemic recession is very different than any other recession we've had before. So like if you look at vacancies and unemployed people in 2008, 2009, at that time we had like 9 job seekers for every vacancy. We've had the exact opposite problem coming out of this recession. So I will talk quickly, but again, please know that there's a lot more information available on different regions and different counties in the state of Minnesota. So we produce regional profiles every year for all 13 economic development regions and all 6 planning regions in the state of Minnesota. So I'm just going to share some very high-level information from the Region 9, which is South Central, which is where we are located today, profile. So Region 9 has about 237,000 500 people in terms of population in 2022. That makes it the 5th largest and the 8th fastest growing economic development region. There's 13 of those in the state of Minnesota as a whole. Some of the counties in the region are seeing growing populations, especially Mankato, North Mankato area. So Blue Earth and Nicollet are both growing. And then some of the counties have an older population and are starting to see some population declines. One thing that's kind of interesting about Region 9 is it actually has a slightly higher percentage of 15 to 24-year-olds. One of the reasons is where we're standing right now, right? People are coming here to attend post-secondary institutions, and that is a big part of the area. Of course, one of the challenges that a lot of colleges will and universities will talk about is how do we keep those young people after they graduate from going somewhere else for employment. This region is rapidly becoming more racially and ethnically diverse. So if you look, about 90% of the population in this region is identifies as being white alone. And that is less racially diverse than the state of Minnesota as a whole, and primarily because of the Twin Cities metro area. It's very similar to other regions in greater Minnesota otherwise. One thing that's interesting is that over the past 10 years, this region has actually seen a decline in the number of people who would report as white alone, and then rapid increases in the number of people who are reporting any other race. About a 45% increase in the number of people who are reporting Hispanic or Latino origin, which can be of any race. Significant changes in the region. And certainly some of that is concentrated in the metro area, Mankato, North Mankato metro area, but it really is spread across all nine counties within the region. They're all seeing an increase in racial diversity. This area is no exception. Has very high labor force participation rates and an extremely tight labor market. So you can see some of the breakdown, and I won't get into it in too much detail. But similar to many other areas of greater Minnesota, they actually have higher labor force participation rates in most age groups. But because a higher percentage of the workforce overall is in the oldest age groups, the overall labor force participation rate is slightly lower. You can see there's also some disparities for workers in the region in terms of unemployment rates and labor force participation rates. And then Southwest Minnesota as a planning region is actually a larger area. It's 23 counties, but includes the nine counties here. This is actually the tightest labor market in the state of Minnesota. Right now, there are 0.3 job seekers per vacancy within this region. So guarantee that if you were out and talking with employers here, they would tell you that they're having a hard time finding enough workers for the jobs they have available. So this region has about 104,500 jobs through the third quarter of 2023. That is up about 1,400 jobs over the past year, so third quarter of 2022 through third quarter of 2023. And saw a very similar growth to the state as a whole during that time frame. That being said, it is still down slightly in comparison to pre-pandemic times, and saw just a huge shock that first year, lost almost 7,500 jobs due to the pandemic recession. One thing that's a little bit unique about Region 9, the largest employing industry is still manufacturing. Almost 19% of total employment in this region is in manufacturing. Statewide, it's 11%. So manufacturing still has a much stronger hold in this region than other areas. But also a lot of jobs in healthcare and social assistance, retail trade, and a stronger concentration of employment in educational services as well. So the key takeaways from the information that we have available, and again, please feel free to reach out to us. We can provide additional information for you. Minnesota's labor force has been slow to bounce back after the pandemic. We are still down workers in comparison to February of 2020. We've seen very steady job creation over the past year, added almost 51,000 jobs in the state. And odds are we could have added more jobs if we had access to more workers during that time frame, which is demonstrated by our consistently low unemployment rate. We have high labor force participation rates across all age groups, but our population is aging. And so that is driving down the overall labor force participation rate. Our job vacancy to job seeker ratio is still very low. In fact, the sixth tightest in the U.S. But that's not unique to Minnesota. That's very common across other Midwestern states as well. And then looking just specifically within this region, South Central, we've got a growing population. Certain counties are seeing growth, certain counties are seeing decline and increasing racial diversity. And then overall, the economy is growing, it's bouncing back from the pandemic, but still has a very tight labor market here as well. With that, this is my contact information. I'm actually located right by Wilmer. And then we have a team of five regional analysts stationed around the state who can provide this type of information. Very localized information on jobs and wages and industry employment trends and things like that. So if you ever have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us. We'd be happy to help. And so do I open it up for questions now?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mark. Questions? All right. Mr. Vice Chair?
I have a question for you, Cameron. If we go back to the wheel slide on page 5, it kind of shows, yeah, that one right there. So I'm looking at that wheel, and I noticed there's a lot of different types of jobs that are represented in our community. I'm having a hard time, maybe it's because of the small print, but is there anything in there specifically that talks about agriculture workforce?
Yeah, so agriculture is an extremely important industry in this region as well. However, DEED is not the best source of data on farm level information because most farms are not reporting into the unemployment insurance program. So we tend to get a lot of the data on the number of farms and the size of the farms and what they're growing through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. They work in partnership with the USDA and the National Agricultural Statistics Service. But when we do, so the job vacancy survey is sent out to employers who are reporting into the unemployment insurance program. That's where we get the list of employers that we send to. So it's probably underrepresented in this data, not intentionally, just because of the restrictions of the data we have access to.
Okay. Then one follow-up?
Go ahead.
Okay, one follow-up on that. I noticed that statewide we're in a crisis when it comes to EMS professionals in our state. I think a lot of those people are now considered to be volunteer. They're not so much paid, but they do get paid a stipend to show up and do their job and that sort of thing. Where do they fall in this wheel on graph?
So they would show up in healthcare.
Martin, go through the chair. I want to make sure that we follow the protocol. We just go through the chair. So you say, Madam Chair, and then you respond to the question.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Brand. So EMS would fall within healthcare and social assistance if they are working for a hospital or a clinic. If they were working for like a local government, a county government, they might show up in public administration.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you have a question?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mark, can you share a little bit more about, I know that obviously the same wheel again, I understand, you know, there's fewer workers, but can you share a little bit more about what is the salary or wage for these fields? Just trying to get a better understanding of the challenges.
Yes, thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. So the pie chart that's shown here, there is additional information that's behind that. So we have like the median hourly wage offer assigned to each of these different industries and then also for all of the occupations that we've seen demand for. So it can vary widely from probably as low as $11 an hour in some, you know, maybe like a cashier type position or something like that to as high as probably, you know, more than $100 an hour for physicians and surgeons. But all of that detail is available through the job vacancy survey. And so if you had questions about specific industries or specific occupations, I would be happy to answer that. I don't know if I'd be able to answer those all off the top of my head, but certainly could provide that.
And some quick follow-up. Do you have, I don't know if you may not have an answer, but just like a medium for this region compared to other parts of the region, what the medium income is?
So, yes, Mr. Chair. So, are you asking about the median wage offer in, like, Southwest
in general
Minnesota
for working family folks in this region compared to, let's say, Metro or other parts of the state?
Yeah. So, in general, the median wage offer would be lower here. The median income would be lower here than for the Metro area overall. So, if I was going to make a guess off the top of my head, Southwest Minnesota, the median hourly wage for offer for job vacancies is probably going to be around $16 or $17 an hour. In the metro area, it's probably going to be closer to $20 to $21 per hour. If you were looking at median household incomes, kind of the same deal. So, like, this area is probably going to be around $60,000 to $65,000, but I can give you the exact number. I'll follow up with you afterwards. It's going to be lower than the Twin Cities metro area, which is certainly closer to 75 or 80,000.
My former seatmate has a question.
Actually, just a comment about Representative Brand's question about agriculture. The 19% manufacturing, that is in the area, a significant portion of that is ag-based, as is, because we've got Cargill, CHS, Archer Daniel, all in Mankato, and their manufacturing jobs are all tied to agriculture, as well as in the service sector, the we have the soybean growers, the corn growers, and the pork producers all have their headquarters here. So I don't know if those actually come out as agricultural jobs so much as they land in manufacturing and service, but it's a significant part of our economy.
Thank you. I just have a quick question, Mr. Mark. So not for this region, but in general, while we have so many jobs open, there are people who are underemployed. They have a job, but they're not making enough money. So do those show up in any of this data, or because they're employed, they won't show up in this?
Yeah, excellent question, Madam Chair. So they would show up in these, like the unemployment rate and the size of the labor force. But we also have some alternative measures of employment. And one of those categories is part-time, but would prefer to be working full-time. We don't have a good measure of underemployment, so if someone is overqualified for the job they have. But the part-time, but would prefer to be full-time, is something that we would have access to.
Thank you very much. I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much for this very informative presentation. And Mr. Mark provided us with his contact and the other regional outreach manager. So if somebody has a question later on, they can reach out to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, I'm giving the gavel to my
moderator.
So he will handle the rest of the meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Next testifier is Dr. Annette Archer, president of South Central College. So if you could proceed to the podium, introduce yourself for the record.
Chair John, Chair Hassan, and committee members, welcome to South Central College. I'm Dr. Annette Parker, president of South Central College. Joining me here today is our Vice President of Academic Affairs, Laura Attenberger, and our Vice President of Strategic Partnerships, Kelsey Woods Nord. South Central College's mission is to provide accessible and inclusive learning environment that cultivates student success and advances regional economic development. We have campuses in North Mankato, Minnesota, where you are here today, but also in Faribault, Minnesota. And I know that through the bonding tour that a few of you have visited us in both locations. So thank you for that. I do want to make a point to say that our Faribault campus is in Region 10. Our economic impact for South Central College, we generate about $170 million of economic impact in our region, about $13.4 million in state and local revenue, about $55.7 million in alumni impact, $2.3 million in community contributions, and about just under 1,300 jobs. I do want to say, it's not in this slide, but South Central College was the first vocational technical institute in the state of Minnesota. We opened in 1946 as our veterans were returning from World War II. So this campus here has a long history of career and technical vocational education. Our areas of work. We're a comprehensive community and technical college, so we serve around 4,300 students annually for credit. Currently, as of Monday, we were up 4.4% in enrollment over last year. We offer over 100 career-ready degree programs, degree or certificate programs, and 20-plus pre-bachelor transfer programs for those students that require to have aspirations to transfer to one of our universities. And I will tell you that I can go over to the student union at MSU and I see a lot of familiar faces. That seems to be the destination for our students that are from this area. I also want to reflect on a little bit of what Cameron said around students coming to higher education and whether or not they stay. We know that our community college students generally are in their mid-20s. They have families and they tend to stay in the region. And so as we continue to get them jobs, our focus is on their civic engagement and their involvement in the community. And I just got through talking about students and I forgot to introduce our student, Parker Smith. Parker is a student senator and Parker's been running our all-in campaign, making sure our students are registered to vote. And we're proud to say that South Central College continues to be have a high participation in voter turnout nationally through that all-in campaign. I want to come back to my slide now and talk about our customized workforce education. So South Central College, a lot of times we talk about our credit programs, but in our workforce and customized training where we work with our employers, we serve around 10,000 students annually. So we do a lot of training with employers throughout the region. And the last I knew, almost every county in the state of Minnesota with some of our specialized training. So I'm going to talk about six areas that focus on industry workforce partnerships that we're working on here at South Central College. Our program advisory committees, industry recognized credentials, internships, apprenticeships, and dual training, MJSP grants, and the SEC Foundation support. So for our industry advisory committees, we started a new process of really having advisory committees. It's called BUILD, Business and Industry Leadership Teams. And it's a new way to really engage employers about what they see that they need their employees to have in the field, not just today, but 3 years out, so that we can really get our curriculum aligned and not be behind as things are changing rapidly with those skill sets. And so it's employer-led, it's really employer-led, working with SEC faculty and staff to facilitate those conversations annually. They discuss the skills employers need for several years, as I mentioned, and we've already implemented that in 5 programs with intentions to do that with all of our career and technical education programs. This is a list of some of our industry recognized credentials. Later on, you're going to hear me talk about credit for prior learning, and this ties directly into that with our non-credit to credit transitions. But throughout several programs, specifically manufacturing, which you hear is very important to our region, the curriculum is aligned to the national standards in across that sector. Internships are generally age 12 weeks, and it gives our students an opportunity to taste the industry, and pretty much all of our programs have either internships or apprenticeships. It encourages them to have a paid learning experience as they're going through their programs. They can earn credits upon completion, and they have entry-level skills through the on-the-job training. And then apprenticeships, and I know this one is going off script just a little bit here to say that we had the first pipeline student in the state of Minnesota, and we're really proud of that with one of our local manufacturers. Those programs are typically 6 months to 2 years. Students are paid employees, either part-time or full-time, and they have a progressive pay scale as they go through their apprenticeship. They earn an academic degree, an industry credential in many cases, and journey level work upon completion. It's defined as on-the-job training plans that allow students to apply for technical skills in their field. And then the funding to support the companies is through the Minnesota Pipeline Project. I want to thank the legislature for continuing to support that since 2016. And as we mentioned, we're proud to be one of the first in the state, actually the first student in the state of Minnesota. So far, we've been awarded our employers $2.2 million in grants to support these students in manufacturing, health sciences, and agriculture, which you heard earlier are all three important to our regional economy. Through our corporate training, we do quite a bit of MJSP grants through D. Through our customized workforce education and partners with our employers, we have 69 employers that have received $7.5 million in MJSP grants since 2020. Again, thank you for the support for that. That is so important. Another important area, industry in our region is mining. And we do quite a bit of update training in OSHA safety and mining in this region with those employers. Our industry foundation support. Our scholarships, provide $500,000 annually in scholarships to our students. The legislative scholarships through the Minnesota Workforce Development Scholarships. And we're gearing up to how we coordinate the North Star Promise Scholarships. And again, many thanks for the North Star. We're gearing up and helping our students understand that that pays for their tuition, right? But then in some of our programs, the students need tools. And so our foundation needs to step up and make sure that they have the tools that they need and things like that to be successful. The leveraged equipment, we're very successful with the leveraged equipment funding through the state, working with our foundation. It helps fund equipment and learning environments for our programs. And then our building project support, which thank you, Representative Brand, for talking about that. In 2017, we received a capital bond for this campus, and it's remarkably different now. We've enhanced quite a bit, but also with $1 million of additional support from our local employers. So we're on the list, number 13 for a $6.1 million grant, and we've so far raised another $1 million from our industry partners to support some very important labs here in dental assisting, surgical tech, ag service technology. What am I missing, Lee?
Civil engineering.
And civil engineering that's going to support our national and statewide work on infrastructure. And we have employers that have stepped up, like Bolton and Meek. They have shared with us that 40 of their employees here in the region are graduates of our civil technology program. Rivers Edge Hospital is sponsoring the civil, the surgical tech lab, and we're working on the other two. They do have a campaign that they just started to match the capital bond. So now I want to talk about our K-12 partnerships. It's been really important to both our region 9 counties and our region 10 counties. We focus on post-secondary enrollment options. This is something that's been growing for us. It wasn't when I started here, we weren't doing very many, and that has been increasing, and you'll see that. We have a National Science Foundation Advanced Technological Education Center grant for IMAC 2.0. We'll talk about that. We have some high school academies we've started, a new program in Faribault called H2C that we're extremely proud of, career exploration, and we'll talk about something that we're also really excited about that's coming up in February, is National Technical Letter Signing Day. So our post-secondary enrollment options, where our students receive college credit while in high school, We have 471 students this academic year. That is significantly up from the years prior. Our NSF, our National Science Foundation grant in IMAC, what that stands for is it's a virtual mechatronics program. And mechatronics is really where you think about how electrical, mechanical, automation, and robotics come together, okay? And so when you think about manufacturing, when you think about food production, when you think about agriculture, really any sector that's a growing field, our students are really graduating and receiving high wages, and they also transfer into engineering quite well. We are providing through that grant, we're training high school teachers through distance education and virtual mechatronic systems that we build, that our faculty actually build and provide to them. And each of the high schools, six regional participating high schools, receive $15,000 worth of equipment so that they can deliver that through their high school programs. So it's really growing the training that high school teachers need to offer this type of training at their schools and to also give the students the credit that they need, the prior credit, so that they can receive high school and college credit going forward. We also have a healthcare academy. We have 150 students from 11 districts that are participating in information technology career academy that has 15 students from 4 districts that participate. And our crown jewel, my crown jewel, H2C, our students in Faribault named this, is called High School to College to Career. It was really modeled. We took a trip with our with some local employers and our chamber in Faribault to IBM in Rochester. And we were really looking at how do we help our community as we think about 2040? How are we going to have a community that comes together, that grows and has a future workforce? And we decided through listening to the D data that we were going to focus on healthcare first. And our school district was really struggling because of diverse. Community was excellent. High school, they passed to support a 7th hour, began offering credit for credit programs, whatever the were credentialed to teach at the high school. They taught at the high school. And then we also taught college credits on the campus. Our students can receive up to 36 college credits in healthcare through stackable credentials. So that in some cases, they could spend one semester after they graduate high school, have an associate degree, and continue on into nursing. I might have misquoted a little bit of that, but I think I'm pretty close, right, ladies?
Close.
Yes. Okay. students in 9th through 12th grade, and I think I touched on everything in this slide. So I'm the only thing that I do want to mention is our employers in Faribault were really wanting to focus on some additional areas, manufacturing, engineering, and construction. And they were chomping at the bit. The data from DEED suggested we should focus on healthcare first. We partnered with Mayo Clinic and Allina Clinic over there for that program. But then we've started our manufacturing construction, and we're working with MSU Mankato for the engineering transfer over in Faribault. And we currently have, we just started that program, and we have 30 students in that, and we have over 200 in the health sciences. What we're also really proud of that's not in this slide is it was to really level up our school, say, yes, we are an excellent school, and to focus on our diversity. And we're seeing huge gains in achievement of our diverse population in Faribault. The other thing we do is focus on career exploration. We just started a new program for young ladies to think about the trades with the YWCA. That's called Trailblazers. And we have 6th through 8th graders on campus every Wednesday to learn about different trades. And that's a growing program, and we're excited about what it's going to do, whether they go into skilled trades or they choose another 2-year program here at the college. We want them to understand their options in the trades. Career Navigator, I misquoted Cameron. We have 15,000 ninth graders we served since 2000, the year 2000, that are here on Fridays. And so it's a pretty busy place on Friday with ninth graders. We do high school campus tours, and then we have career and college fairs throughout the region. This is something we started, the National Career and Technical Education Letter of Intent Signing Day 9 years ago. It's an annual signing day where we have employers here. It's televised through all the partner colleges and employers around the nation, where employers stand behind our students, and as they sign letters of intent, that they will show up in August, that they will be professionals in their field, and that they will finish their credential. We honor our students that are pursuing career and technical education, kind of like athletics, but it's focused on career and technical education students. Our foundation really partners with us to award scholarships, and so every student that attends will receive at least a $500 scholarship. And then we also recognize the Minnesota Workforce Development scholarships that you all provide at that event as well. And we usually invite our legislators, but a lot of times they're in session, so they can't make it. But it's really cool when they can come and shake students' hands and we can recognize and support the work and the legislature stands behind them as well in these fields. I want to talk about our adult learners. We know that given the demographics, I always talk about it here in Greater Mankato as all hands on deck. We know that we've got gaps in employment. Our employers need people in every sector, and we're not going to get there without really embracing adult learners and really helping them to think about a new career that moves them into a high-paid middle-class job. And so we do that through Credit for Prior Learning, Adult Basic Education and Career Workforce Partnerships, and another new program that we're extremely proud of called Uniquely Abled. So our Credit for Prior Learning, we award academic credit for college-level knowledge gained outside of the classroom. It can be military work, workplace, community-based, or self-study. And in the last 11 years, we've awarded 622 students 4,794 credits through Credit for Prior Learning. We're working with Adult Basic Education with what we call our Bridge Program, and it we're focused on bridges into healthcare, manufacturing, and information technology on our Faribault campus. And then I think I'm coming close to an end, but our Uniquely Able program is a national, and we are the first and only school to offer this in the state of Minnesota. It's for high-functioning autistic students. It's training for young adults with autism for careers. So far, we're offering computerized numerical control, and we're going through our third cohort that'll be running this summer. It's supported by D, Vocational Rehabilitation Services, and the Minnesota Department of Human Services. We have through demonstration and of this program and the positive media that it has received, we are now in the process of developing a new program for print press operators with the Taylor Corporation. And then we're partnering with the South Central Service Cooperative to provide high school students and special education hands-on learning opportunities while introducing them to the UAA, Uniquely Abled Academy, to potential future students. And I do believe our faculty and staff are working with other Minnesota State institutions that have an interest in offering. Other grants that we utilize to help us get the job done is we have a U.S. Department of Education Title III grant that is focused on adult learner pathways. We have a U.S. Department of Agriculture grant that's focused on advanced agriculture technician. And to Mr. Considine's point earlier about manufacturing, we have a lot of food production that, it's not looked at as agriculture, it's manufacturing, but it's producing food. And we brought together our mechatronics program with our ag program, and that's what this is a way to think about the automation in food processing. We have a U.S. Department of Education FIPSI grant that focuses on the mechatronics, and that's the automation, right, that we all know we're moving towards. And then a new one this year is it's actually the band Metallica. They have a foundation now that that is called All Within My Hands, where they award grants for students that focus on career and technical education. And so we have just awarded how many grants this year?
We did 4 this fall, and then we just sent out 22 more for the spring.
Yes. And it's all Metallica's kind of helping students understand that career and technical education school. Thank you, and I'll take any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you, Dr. Parker, for that presentation. Thank you for all the work that you and we do have a few questions from members, and first question is Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Parker. This was very helpful and a lot of informative information that we will take with us and read more and maybe call you for questions. You touched on the question that I asked Mr. Mark earlier about the underemployment, so adult learners, that was my question. There are a lot of people who possibly came from other countries, they were professionals in their countries, come here, can get certification, can work with. You see doctors who were tax drivers because the process of becoming a doctor here is really different. So is there more interest for that kind of training here for people to get like certification on the field that they have the expertise for, they don't have the credentials because of coming from different background.
Dr. Parker.
Chair Hassan, thank you for that question. Yes, you almost spoke exactly what I was saying when we started Credit for Prior Learning. You know, I remember having a student here, an adult student from Somalia. It was a doctor who was trying to get into nursing. And it's like, I mean, really, how many of these courses does he really need? And so that's when we started looking at our credit for prior learning. And so they can do an assessment and then be awarded college credit and then just take what they need to take to get back into the job of their choice. So thank you. And I do want to say that South Central College, Cameron shared the demographics of our region. South Central College is 24% students of color. And we work to make that happen. We have Hispanic nights that we invite in the entire Hispanic community. All the literature, everything is in their language. The meal is in their language. We do the same with the Somali community, et cetera. And we make sure that we're a place that they know that we are their friend and their partner in this community. And I think that that is why you're seeing the growth of the diversity of our student body.
Curious.
Just a comment and not a question. The Uniquely Abled Academy.
Yes.
That is a wonderful program. Did I hear you say that it was the first?
It's first in the state of Minnesota, the ninth national.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Parker. I am a mental health practitioner by training and accidental politician. So when I saw that, I was like, this is really a wonderful program, because a lot of times what happens is that people who have special needs or disabilities, our society leaves them out of the workforce. So including, people, adults with autism is a wonderful program. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. I do want to say that it goes to our mission. I spoke to it. It said that we were inclusive and accessible institution that focuses on regional economic development. And we have the two, the Blind and the Deaf Academy in Faribault. And we take all of that. When we think about diversity, equity, inclusion, and it's all hands on deck. And we see that we are the open door for our community, and we make sure that it's accessible and inclusive.
Next is Vice Chair Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question for you. So your presentation showed many, many different pathways to this campus. And so the traditional students, the non-traditional students, international students, you've got the Uniquely Abled Academy. You've got a lot of different pathways to this campus. It's been about 25 years since I first entered the doors of a college to take a tour. And I remember how kind of difficult that was. And so what does this college offer in terms of programs or mentorship and that sort of thing to kind of take the edge off of that, just that intimidation factor of walking into a college saying, I'm on my career path?
Dr. Parker?
Representative Brandt. Chair Hassan, Representative Brandt. In 2017, South Central College joined a national organization of community colleges. We were selected through an application and review process to be an Achieving the Dream school. Achieving the Dream is a national organization. It was initially funded through the Lumina Foundation around 2000 because community colleges' success rates were so bad. That organization focuses on student success through a culture of evidence. And what we have done together is build consensus that we were going to be an Achieving the Dream school, that we were going to make ourselves vulnerable to understand what we needed to do to do better. And I'm proud to say that in 2019, we were selected as a leader college in Achieving the Dream for making significant success in our leading indicators our diverse student body, our low-income students, through certain measures that we've implemented. I could spend a lot of time talking about them, but I do want to say that we've done that together. And looking at our data, working with our coaches. And I'm also proud to say that next month I'll be traveling to Orlando because one of our students, a Latino woman from St. Peter, has been selected as a Dream Scholar, one of eight in the country. And she's going to tell her story, which started with her father, who was a migrant worker from El Salvador with a third grade education, and her mother from Mexico, who was a migrant worker with a third grade education. She is going to be graduating here with a degree in pre-social work in May and transferring to Minnesota State Mankato to finish her bachelor's degree in social work.
Mr. Brass?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Any further questions from members? Seeing none, thank you, Dr. Parker, for your presentation.
Thank you.
Next testifier is a former colleague of ours in the Minnesota legislature and the other body, and a former congressman who served in U.S. House for 10 years, is Mr. Tim Penny from the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. Welcome, Mr. Penny. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing your committees to Southern Minnesota. I'm Tim Penny, president of the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. I listened with interest to Dr. Parker's presentation, and it just reminds me of how significantly important the many two-year institutions across all of Minnesota are to the economic vitality of our regions and how responsive you are to the needs of our respective regions around the state. So just wanted to mention that. But also, when you started talking about the Metallica scholarships, I was wondering whether it was going to be for heavy metal programming, and that's not the case. Glad that they're investing in career advancement and career exploration. I did provide handouts. There's a handout of the slideshow that that I'll be walking through. There's also our programmatic brochure from the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. It's about 30 slides, so I'm going to move through this really quickly. We are one of six rural initiative foundations. We have been around. Clicker's not working. Technical difficulty. Sorry about that. Then it works. Okay. Now we're in business. We are one of six rural initiative foundations that cover collectively the 80 non-metro counties of Minnesota. And in our case, we serve a region in south central southeastern Minnesota that comprises the Region 9 Development Commission, the Greater Mankato area, as well as the left. Represent with our work the 20 counties. 9 is just in the economic vitality of this region. Our motto is collaborating for regional vitality, and in so doing, we partner with groups and organizations within our region that are investing in the same kinds of activities that we prioritize as a foundation. But it also brings us into partnership with, for example, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, Minnesota Department of Human Services, and Minnesota Department of Education in terms of our early childhood work. At our foundation, we basically do three things. I was in politics, as the chair mentioned a while ago, so I learned in politics that if you spread too few dollars over too many things, you're probably not going to move the needle. And so we try to concentrate our work in entrepreneurship, early childhood, and community vitality. I call that our small town work, because while we are benefited by 12 regional centers here in South Central Southeastern Minnesota, we have about 150 towns that are like 2,000 in population or less. We want to make sure that some of our resources are dedicated to those needs. In our entrepreneur space, our programming includes the Prosperity Initiative, which is a business coaching program for new immigrant minority entrepreneurs. We've also opened that up to women entrepreneurs in our region. About 90 individuals have gone through that training program in the last few years. We have an inclusive and equitable community grant program that goes to groups and organizations, including school districts in our region, to create opportunities for the community to become better at outreach and inclusion and making sure that everyone is benefiting from the resources that the school district or community can offer. We have an Ignite competition every year that feeds into the Minnesota Cup competition, where businesses from our region go through a local competition. The winner then goes on to the statewide competition. It's a way of encouraging entrepreneurial startups here in our region. We have a local foods collaborative in our region, which is a growing sector of our economy. With the rolling bluffs along the Minnesota and the Mississippi rivers, small-scale agriculture is a thing that's possible to build a successful family business around, and we're trying to support the growth of that sector in our region. We have a variety of peer networks. We have an annual Entrepreneur Bridge event, small business training event, and we have some lending programs that we offer. We invest almost $3 million annually in this entrepreneur work collectively. And over time, we have issued 793 loans that have supported 596 local businesses in our region and created 5,223 jobs by our count. And all of that in partnership with local banks, economic development agencies, et cetera. So I often say in modesty that we are not the be-all and the end-all to new business startups in our region, but we're a helpful partner, and we can often be helpful to those businesses that might not be bankable. And we also are a Sharia lender. We do dozens of business trainings throughout the year. I mentioned one of those, the Prosperity Initiative, which is basically a coaching program where up to 40 hours of coaching can be provided to businesses that are trying to get up and running, get off to a stronger start. We're very proud of that program, and we'll be offering a new cohort an opportunity to join that program in the very near future. And this slide here is just a listing of some of the more recent participants in that program. And again, even though you might need a magnifying glass, I have copied off the PowerPoint for your use, and you can look at the types of businesses that have been through this program and the testimonial about the program and the participants. Our local foods work is done in collaboration with Renewing the Countryside, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, sustainable ag groups in our region, and more. We have a micro lending program for people that are trying to grow their local foods business. We also, every November, just ahead of the holiday season, have a local foods festival, feast festival that we host at the Mayo Civic Center in Rochester. This year, we had, I think, 83 local food producers and processors participate in that event. I call it a farmer's market on steroids. We had 1,300 people come through that event, and significant sales occurred. So it's a way of highlighting and advancing the local food sector in our region. Here are the numbers on this slide. And the amount of sales occurring on that day is simply one of the benefits that these vendors achieve. But a lot of it is just brand recognition, getting the word out about who they are, and educating the public about the important value that local foods brings to our regional economy. We have another program called the Rural Entrepreneur Venture Program that we have offered for the last 6 years now. Each cohort of four or five communities go through like a three-year strategic planning process about how to create a more entrepreneurial culture within their community. And this program has brought to bear a number of benefits. Among those, as an example, a couple of communities have built, and these are small communities, have built interest in creating something equivalent to a chamber of commerce. Others have contracted with Comprehensive Employment Development Associates to bring a part-time economic development officer into their work. They've done surveys of existing businesses in these communities. We urge them to do a generous amount of outreach to make sure that they're touching and serving the needs of all businesses. Some of them have resulted in succession planning programmings that they've offered to businesses that are at that point in turning over the business to the next generation. And a couple of these communities are now exploring a local real estate fund to invest in economic development projects in their town. Again, several communities have gone through this program on two separate occasions, and we recently added and are starting the process of working with Caledonia, Cass, and Plainview, and then the school district of Fairfax, Gibbon, Winthrop, which is up in Sibley County in the north end of our region. One other thing I wanted to mention, and again, there are a couple of extra slides about folks in the communities that are in the Rural Entrepreneur Venture Program. Our inclusive and equitable community grant program stretches over a month and a half, and we do sort of an asset-based training program to make sure that in carrying forward this work within their community around entrepreneurship, economic development, career opportunities, that they really are pulling in all sectors of the community into that work. And you can see in the slides that I have provided some examples of the work that's been conducted by these grants in several communities. The last thing I wanted to mention in this space of entrepreneurship is that during COVID, a number of businesses were closed, restricted, and the federal government allocated to the state of Minnesota dollars for small business recovery grants. The Department of Economic Development reached out to the six rural initiative foundations to ask if we could help get those grant dollars out the door in our region to businesses that had documented losses year on year that were a result of those closures and restrictions. In our case, we pushed out that there were almost 2,000 grants, totaling roughly $20 million. And we did that over about an 18-month period. And happy to play that role at a time of great need and difficulty for those businesses in our region. The last thing I'll mention, because I referenced earlier, that the Region 9 area covers nine counties on the west end of our 20-county region. The other 11 counties do not have a regional development commission. So our foundation, at the request of the Federal Economic Development Agency, has for the last 15 years developed a strategic economic development strategy for those 11 counties. And we just completed the latest iteration of that strategic economic development plan and met with dozens of community leaders just on Monday of this week to announce the approval of this plan by the EDA. And now those communities have this plan so they can check that box when they're seeking federal funding for the needs in their communities, which can include disaster recovery, which sadly sometimes occurs. Representative Brand can remember that 25 years ago when a huge mile-wide tornado hit his community. I'm going to skip over the map because it's simply a way of each year of us kind of rolling out visually how our entrepreneur resources are spread across the 20 counties that we serve. Early childhood work, a couple million dollars annually. This is hugely important for today's workforce because parents need to know that their children are in a safe, secure, and quality early childhood environment, but it's also a long-term bet on a quality work. Because if these kids don't come to kindergarten ready to learn, they often don't catch up, and that can dramatically hamper their success, their future. And so we know that the needs in this realm are great, and so we do dedicate a good chunk of our work every year to early childhood needs in our region. One of those areas of work is in literacy. We have a partnership with two publishing companies here in North Mankato, ABDO and Capstone. They provide roughly 25,000 books to us as a donation each year, and we distribute those books to 50, 60, 70 organizations around the region, maybe school districts, libraries, other organizations that are meeting early childhood needs and attaching some reading instruction to that program. And oftentimes, then the books go home with children so they can start building their home library. And it's a way of advancing early literacy for the youngest people in our Southern Minnesota population. The next two slides just give you the most recent year, how many organizations receive these book grants. and the number of votes that distributed with a second language and the most serious demand in our region has been Spanish, but we're also able to get books in other languages as well and make that part of our distribution program. We do a lot of early childhood trainings. We want to make sure that those that are providing care for our youngest children are getting an opportunity at no cost. Usually these trainings are in the evening or on a weekend because these are busy people all day long, at no cost, so that they can get the continuing ed credits. They need to stay in business and be the best they can be with these young children in their care. And in the last several years, with grant dollars from the Andreas Foundation and now from the Mayo Foundation, we have expanded those trainings to those who are offering childcare on a friend, family, and neighbor basis. Because even if you're not licensed, we want to make sure that the training programs are available. So again, we can have the best quality childcare being offered to children within our region. We have a bunch of partnerships around training as well, and we help support financially and promote trainings that other groups and organizations in our region are offering. So we're not trying to be the be-all and the end-all of early childhood provider trainings. We just want to make sure that providers in our region have those opportunities so they can, again, take the training, keep their licensure, stay in business, and be the best they can be. And on this slide, it's just a listing of some of the other trainings in our region that we help to support and promote. We have annually an early childhood grant program. Upwards of 20 organizations get these grants every year. Often they go to the early childhood family education program at a school district, and maybe some other entity in the community, all designed to help them improve, enhance, expand early childhood offerings in their town. And in this regard, we received numerous grant requests this last fall, a number of which focused on mental health needs in the early childhood space. And because of a grant we received from another funder, and the focus of that grant was to be on mental health needs in our region, we were able to expand the number of early childhood grants and use those dollars for those several organizations that needed programming in that space. And I'm very proud that we were able to do that. And this is just an example of a grant that we provided to the early childhood space that brought benefit to the city and catered through the YWCA. We also, and this is in part with dollars from the Department of Economic Development, deal with child care shortage in our region. In South Central Southeast Minnesota, we have about demand for 8,000 slots that are there. So we're really working closely with communities across our region to help them address their early childhood needs. In different towns, there will be different solutions. In smaller towns, aren't going to be able to support a child care center. So it has to be in-home or it has to be a creative model. And two examples of that, Wells, Minnesota, the backside of the bank. We worked with them, worked with the bank, worked with the county, the Department of Health and Human Services, and identified that that back bank space with kitchenette and bathroom space could be used by two in-home providers so they wouldn't have to remodel their home in order to provide child care in that town. And prior to that effort, there were no child care providers in that town, roughly 2,000. We also worked with Northfield, Minnesota. There was a public facility in Northfield that just recently opened and is allowing we call it a pod, where more than one in-home provider can now use that joint space to provide child care for the needs in that community. And again, this is an area that we have devoted a lot of resources to over the last several years to help communities be creative about meeting the child care needs within that town. And this is just a summary with the bar graphs of the number of providers that have received training through our programming over the years. And here again, the map just to demonstrate that our early childhood resources are spread across the 20 county region that we serve. So that brings me to the end of my prepared remarks. Again, you have PowerPoint to review as you have time, and you have our program brochure. This used to be about a dozen brochures, and we just decided to roll it all up into one, just to make it easier for folks in the region to identify the kinds of resources that we can bring them to the table. I've often said that our motto and our mode of operation is to collaborate for regional vitality, which means in the entrepreneur space, the early childhood space, we're trying to be a helpful complement, a helpful supplement to what others are doing so that collectively, in my view, the sum can be greater than the parts, and we can bring greater benefit and entrepreneurship and early childhood to this region. So with that, thank you again for coming to Southern Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Finney. We do have some questions from members, and first member of question is Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Finney. It was great to hear your overview, and as a reader, I get really excited about literacy grants. I'm just interested in how the books are selected to be able to reflect all of the kids in the community so that when kids reading the books see someone who looks like themselves.
They do, and we're very mindful of that when we go to meet with our donors here in North Mankato. So there's a great diversity of books in terms of children seeing themselves in the books. There's also a wide range of topics that are covered in these books, so it's not all just colors and numbers. It's emotions, and then we work with the organizations that receive the books, and they have to document the types of books they need, the way those books will be used. And so there's that kind of a reporting and accountability tied to our book distribution program.
Representative Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will say, incidentally, that when it comes to reading, my grandchildren, I have seven now, for their birthday and for Christmas, whatever else I might buy them, they get a book. It has become sort of a recurring joke. I think I'll open the book from Papa first because they know by the shape of the package that that's the book.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question, just a comment. And my comment is this. You know, I was a city council member for 7 years before I became a state representative. And the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation has been pretty virtually every year. We always have a great conversation together between the council and you yourself when you stop in and have a conversation about what's going on, how you can be of helpful service to the community, but also as a state representative. You've also been there as well as we talk about childhood and childhood needs across this whole spectrum of the 20 counties where you serve. And the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation has been there to testify about the need in our legislature when we're talking about investments in our committees. And I know Chair Hassan in your committee as well. And so I just want to thank you for being there, because I know that that means you're also being there for all those communities across our region. So thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Finney, and thank you, Mr. Lester. Any further questions for the member? Closing statements.
It's opening a can of worms, I think, but I thought about this during everyone's presentation, especially starting when Mr. Mock said businesses would like to add jobs if they could find more workers. And being on capital investment committee and on the housing committee, I've heard all across the state the issues of unavailable, inadequate stats of housing. And I'm just curious if there's any conversation that supports this specifically, because I don't want to open the whole housing conversation, that you have thoughts on that would support this work.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, we don't do housing, but it comes up all the time. And I know that in our region, there are other organizations that are trying to collectively pull together resources to address those needs. Actually, the meeting on Monday that I referenced, where we announced the latest iteration of our comprehensive economic development strategy for the region, housing needs, affordable housing, workforce housing was all part of that. And an organization that we helped to launch about 12 years ago called Southeastern Minnesota Together is taking lead in coordinating conversations among communities in that 11-county region to prioritize investments in housing in that area. So we're tangentially, because of this comprehensive economic development strategy, we have helped to launch some work around housing. But as I mentioned earlier, a number of years ago, our board decided to keep our work focused on entrepreneurship, early childhood, and small towns, so that our roughly $6 million a year can have the greatest impact in three areas of work. And that seemed to be kind of bigger than we could handle. But there are other organizations like the Southwest Housing Partnership and others that can bring resources to bear. And I know that St. Peter in particular has offered some creative solutions to housing needs in their town. And I often use them as an example when other towns are saying, what can we do? I turn them toward your city administrator and say, talk to Todd Crafty, because they found creative ways to meet that need. And we need that kind of creativity in virtually every town in this part of the state, because housing is a constant concern.
Representative Rack.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a second question, if anyone. The other is just the challenge of having there be enough individuals who could be employed, and we saw the numbers. And I think about all of the people who are trying to move into this country. We hear so much about immigration, and there are so many jobs and there's so many people, and what we are thinking about collectively as a way to make Minnesota a place where people can readily move, resettle, start their lives over. We've done so well with many communities. There's so much need. And so thinking about that as part of a collective challenge on ways that we can support that. And again, Dr. Parker, when you were talking, I was thinking about that. And we talked about it, but in all of the ways that you need to support people who come with their own specific set of needs to be able to thrive in a community. So I just wanted to raise that for discussion if anyone is interested.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I'll simply respond to that by saying that several of our programs, including most specifically the Inclusive and Equitable Community Grant Program, but also to some extent, certain communities applying for our Small Town Grant Program, and then those communities that we enroll in the Rural Entrepreneur Venture Program, that outreach, inclusion, and addressing the needs of, and also the assets that they bring is a piece of the work in those various programs that we offer.
Representative Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say to all of you, for me, as a legislator, what we can do is to hear your ideas and your needs, say, well, here are some barriers that exist to being able to do this well and fully. If we don't know what the barriers are, we can't help. So please, please bring them forward, because that's, for me, speaking for myself, that's why I'm here.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, closing statements, we have Representative Vice Chair Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to everybody who attended today, came down for this hearing. Thank you to the wonderful presenters and showing how proud I am of the community after listening to these presentations today, how proud I am of Southern Minnesota for what we have for challenges, but also how we face those challenges and meet the needs for the future. You know, our community is renowned for feeding and fueling the people of our state and across the country and across the world as well. And, you know, we do have some challenges, you know, but we also have a wonderful bunch of organizations. We have some organizations here, but there's a lot of organizations in the community that are meeting the challenges of how we deal with homelessness, how we deal with childcare, how we deal with getting people reskilled and retrained into our communities working. You know, I've got a great partner behind me with Greater Mankato Growth as well here, also present today. There are a lot of great people that I rely on when I go up to the legislature and say, okay, here we go. This is what we need. This is what we're we're talking about. This is how we maybe can connect some dots. And so, again, thanks for coming. Thank you for being great partners. And I look forward to challenges and finding some solutions in this next legislative session.
Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, everyone, all the presenters, as well as Dr. Parker and your team and the team in South Central College for welcoming us. We came here seeking, you know, ideas, solutions, and you gave us a lot of ideas. We don't have all the answers, and I don't think money is the only solution. While money, you know, solves some of the problems, coming up with creative ideas and working together and partnering up with community is how we solve the problem ahead. 28,000 jobs is a lot of jobs. So how do we make sure that not only are we, you know, filling those jobs, but how do we make sure that we are also, you know, training the people that need that extra training to, you know, fulfill their dream of getting, you know, paid well enough so they can support their families. I am from an immigrant community that, you know, is roughly new to this country. Somali community, you know, came to the U.S. about 30 years ago, and some are roughly new as, like, coming here a year ago or 2 years ago, you know, coming to a new country and learning a language, learning the culture, learning, you know, new traditions, new systems is complicated. And I know a lot of people aspire to get trainings to. Everybody that I talked to wants to own their own businesses. That my community have a very high entrepreneurship spirit. Everybody I talked to, they were like, will say, I want to be my own boss and I want to own my own business. And sometimes all they need is the right information and a little hand-holding to get to where they're going. So thank you guys for all the work that you're doing. We have a lot to take in, and we have a session ahead of us. We welcome you guys to call us, email us, send us more ideas if you have some. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. And everything has been said already, so I'm not going to say much, but just want to say that last session we were able to pass a $1 billion bill. Mm-hmm. That was because of all of you coming to our committee here in the workforce and economic development, sharing with us our challenges and sharing with us how we can solve those issues. And so we welcome you to come back this year to work with us. That's why we're down here. We want to hear from the community and community leaders like you all who are doing the great work here. And so that said, I'm looking forward to our 2024 session. And before we go, I also want to thank our DEED staff for making a drive up here or down here, South Central College, Dr. Parker, Mr. Penny, the Nation Foundation, and to Shelly Nagal for helping coordinate the logistics thing, and to our wonderful house staffers for Travis and our nonpartisan staff and staff on our other side of the aisle be here today to make this event that we've been talking for the last several months happen. So that's it. Before we go, I know that Chair Hassan shared with us her retirement earlier this week, but aside from that, it was also her birthday. And so my former colleague, Jack Constantine, got a cake. So if you all can join me in saying happy birthday to Chair Hassan and eating some cake before you all go. So if you could join me saying happy birthday.